This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Hey, Tom. Welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week. Hashtag Politrics with Fresh and Botsang. Hopefully your week has been incredible and full of shenanigans and politrics. That's why we're here, to break them down for you. Botsang.
Yes, Tato, thanks. And thanks to the viewers. It has been a very busy week for some, except for me. But, you know, God willing, we are here.
In fact, weekends are robot or orangey today.
Hey, like last week, you came to the studio with shorts. I nearly wore shorts, actually. And I thought the viewers would say, what's wrong with this guy? He's not playing here.
Yeah, the show is on a Saturday for a reason, so we can relax.
We can relax.
Absolutely.
I honestly nearly wore shorts, but I just, you know, felt like being a bit casual.
Error. Hey. Let us start with a story that goes back to 1993. The assassination of Communist Party leader Chris Hani.
Yes.
He was murdered by Janusz Waluś, a Polish extremist.
Yes.
And as we are told, the assassination was meant to destabilize, I think it was the Codesa talks at
Codesa
the time.
The engagements, yeah.
And I think thanks to Madiba and his measured address to the nation, we probably averted what could have been a very bloody situation. But fast forward to the release of Janusz Waluś. He was released, obviously, on parole because the system says after serving X amount of your term, you must be released.
Yeah.
The Communist Party objected. Mama Dimpo Hani also objected because she feels there hasn't been a full disclosure or any remorse shown. And what was decided after he got parole 2 years ago is that after the parole is done, he'll be deported to Poland.
Yes, man.
And the Polish government would have to cover that because his citizenship was revoked.
Yeah.
Which means it becomes a Polish problem.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts and your views on, one, the deportation? Because my view is, and given the politics in Poland, where there's a lot of right-wing activity.
Exactly.
You're martyring him by sending him back home. Versus he must die here.
Look, Fresh, unfortunately, when there are laws, the laws are there to be obeyed and respected too. You know, funny enough that this week my Ramukholi or favorite, my uncle was saying to me, you like to talk about laws and respect of the laws, but criminals don't respect the laws.
Yes.
But look, it is within the South African. I want to focus before we go to the situation in Poland. It is within the South African, what do you call it, legislation, the parole system of the country allows. But you will remember that when Janusz Waluś time came to be considered for parole, the opposition by Medim Pohani, as well as the South African Communist Party and other interested parties, was on the fact that he did not disclose who actually sent him.
Exactly.
Who was he acting on behalf of and all that. But
was it really just the two of them?
It was. Exactly. Was it just him and what is the other, Clive Darby Lewis?
Who provided him the gun.
Yes. Now, Fresh, that is politics. And I think they were trying to use something that could have been on the line with the Truth and Reconciliation Committee.
Yes.
And all that. But that's politics. They were playing politics. However, in this instance, wrong or right, it is about the parole and the justice system of the country.
So, for instance, when Justice Minister Lamola back in 2020 rejected the parole.
Yes.
Was he acting out of place?
Look, remember
because
the application.
Because he was due for parole.
Yes. But and first of all, remember, it is the prerogative of the Minister of Justice and that time constitutional development, and it was still with even correctional services at time. When he rejected it, he was exercising his powers.
Yeah.
To say we can accept this parole or not. But the basis, that's why they lost the case. When I say they, I mean the government.
The Concord said it was an irrational decision.
The Constitutional Court came with a ruling that it was an irrational decision.
Yes.
It was not in accordance with the constitutional right of human beings in South Africa, the Bill of Rights. It is also not in accordance with the parole rules. He met all the requirements of a parole. There is no requirement in the parole rules of this country that you must confess your sins. or your crimes, or who sent you, why did you do that? The system, the justice system, had already found Yalouz Walouz guilty for murder because he was the trigger man who shot and killed the late Chris Hani. You understand? So he was already found guilty and served his sentence in accordance with the constitutional provisions or the Department of Justice provision or Correctional Service provisions. So I agreed with the Constitutional Court that time to say the minister and their basis to oppose his parole was unjust. And then the court ruled that he must be provided his constitutional rights as prescribed by the Constitution. And that's 3 years back now. And also then came on the terms and the conditions of the parole.
Sure.
That he will be deported to his country of origin, which is Poland.
Mm.
The fact that he didn't tell us the truth, the fact that he promised this past Tuesday to have a press conference in Poland, in Polish, to tell who actually sent him and what actually happened in 1993 when Tate Hani was murdered, it's something outside the constitutional provisions. And he may decide to keep quiet. He has served his term. He has received his parole. The condition is he must be deported to his country. Now, that's where his regime or country, Poland, comes in. And they accepted that they will extradite him from South Africa. And also they will cover the cost of deportation from South Africa. And remember also along the lines, due to the diplomatic relations between South Africa and Poland, the Polish, to show how serious they were, they revoked his citizenship when he was in South Africa. Now they will have to give him his citizenship back.
Yeah.
And you know what does it say? It's going to make him a hero in his country, especially with the political situation in Poland. Remember, the extremists have lost power in Poland in the last few years. They've lost power, and that's the parties and organizations that he claimed to have belonged to. In Poland, who are right-wing, you know, extremists.
I was going to say, because you still have a gang, almost 50%... I would assume, of radicalized youth in Poland.
Exactly, Fresh. But like I said, he may be going to Poland, or he may be in Poland to be used to resuscitate the defeated. Understand?
Hence, I'm saying that, I mean, he's being martyred by being sent home.
Well, that's his country, and that's how his country is operating. What could you have done if the Constitutional Court has made a ruling?
Could have actually kept his South African citizenship. And then said your parole conditions include house arrest for X amount of years. I don't know.
And we must maintain him like we're doing with all others, the voting persons and others that we are maintaining. We are taking care of them. We are giving them stipends every month. Or we give them jobs. So we should keep a problem here and continue to feed, fund, and give salary to that problem. No, let this guy go to his country. It is not going to bring back the life of Chris Hani. We'll probably leave this world without knowing the truth.
Sure.
I think it is important for people like the Hani family, Mpedi Pwani and the kids, to know exactly what it is, because there's been rumors and you know, talks here and there that actually, despite the fact that he didn't act alone, Clive Davy Lewis was involved. The firearm that was used was a 9mm Parabellum Z88 that belonged to the South African National Defense Force. And the apartheid government, agents were involved. And some people within the African National Congress who said they could have compromised Tate Hani at that time. But you know, Flesh, I sit here and I think how cruel. I understand why the apartheid regime would use an extremist right-wing Polish immigrant who actually came here just to kill Hani. He was not an immigrant who came to live in South. He just came here specifically to kill
Hani. No, but he had citizenship, though. So how would he have gained the citizenship?
No, all I'm saying is I would understand how the apartheid regime have given him citizenship to come and do the dirty work.
Okay.
But what will baffle me is why would members or leaders of the African National Congress that Chris Hani led, you know, with pride and dignity for over this, get themselves involved in assassination of their leader, especially after what Hani has done for the ANC in exile in Lesotho from the time was, you know how many assassination attempts he has survived in Lesotho, in Zambia, all over, even in Rhodesia, the former Rhodesia and Zimbabwe. The ANC had protected and worked with him as their leader, and why would they now go to an extent of helping right-wing immigrants and the apartheid regime? That would be betrayal of note. But who in the ANC would have interest that Hani is assassinated?
Is out of the way.
Understand why? Why would someone? What interest would they have had? Especially when you look at how the ANC was united in 1994. There's nothing called absolute love or absolute unity. But the ANC, whether we like it or not, between 1990 and 1994, they were a one united force. They worked together, even where they disagreed. We all know that Ntate Hani stood up, was one of those who stood up, was against the negotiation, was against the Kodesa engagement. But after Madiba sat down with him and engaged him and other people like the then negotiator, President Mbeki and President Zuma, they engaged with him, and he stood up and he said, this is what the leadership of the organization want, and therefore I will abide by what they've decided. Why would you kill a person who has arrived at a point to say the leadership has made a call and I am accepting what the leadership has done? But Janus Walus may be a thorn in us, maybe an enemy of black people in South Africa, but he's going to be a hero in Poland. I just wish one day, should it happen before some of us die, we actually know what actually transpired. But fresh again, I'm saying to somebody, why would we believe him? Why would we, in our normal senses, stand up and believe that what Janus Walus is going to tell us, or he promised to tell, that he couldn't tell in 30 years? Why would we believe him now that what he's going to say is the truth? You know what I think is going to happen? And I think the day he talks, it will be a strategy to divide the ANC even further. And I think names are going to be thrown in there.
Are you saying he could talk for the sake of just muddying the water and it might not even be factual?
He has no honor. He is not an honorable person. A person who shows remorse, as Madim Pohani is saying, if he was showing remorse, if he was sorry about what happened, on hindsight, in reflection now, the daughter had come to South Africa twice to engage with the SABC and ENCA and the father. He had an opportunity at that time. He had an opportunity when he approached the Concord to say, you know what, if my parole is being denied because I haven't told, let me tell, and for peace sake, I will leave this country. What makes us that he had to fight to be silent? Remember, going to the Concord is to fight to be silent.
Sure.
I will die with this.
I've served my time. Let me go.
I've served my time. Let me go home. That what he's going to say, if I will not believe what he's saying. He's going to muddy the ANC. He's going to divide it even further. He's going to throw names of ANC leaders. Some of them, I can tell you now, some of them have departed. And you know these people who talk about the departed people, what they said, this is what they believe in, when they are not there to defend themselves. Yeah. Let me make an example. This past week, we saw in one of the weekend newspapers, they now... Prime Minister of some Bapedi clan, Ngwakora Mathodi, the former Premier of Limpopo, standing up and releasing what do you call this thing, a WhatsApp conversation purported to be between himself and the late Minister of Finance, Mr. Tito Mboweni. Now, that's a month or two after Mr. Tito Mboweni has passed on, and you release these WhatsApp conversations. That nobody has come and tested if they really existed, or they rely on what Ngwakora Mathodi is telling us to say Tito Mboweni was against the GNU. Tito Mboweni felt Ramaphosa is a sellout and all that. That's absolute nonsense.
So why did you not say it while Ntate Mboweni was alive?
When they were having that conversation,
exactly.
There are people in the ANC who stood up like Solly Mapaila, as well as the Sisulu lady, the former minister Sisulu, who stood up and said this GNU is not in line with the ANC policy. Now, for Ngwakora Mathodi to come and say there are other leaders of the ANC, some are even dead.
They must stand up then.
They must stand up. What kind of cowardice is this if they claim to be leaders? So it's the same thing as Janus Walu standing up and telling us or coming to tell us that some of the departed ANC leaders were involved in the planning of the assassination of Khlisani. I will dismiss that as hogwash.
Mama Dimpo is saying there must be an inquest. Should there be an inquest?
The inquest will only, I think, you know, I understand where Mama Dimpo is coming from. Mm. If you want closure, there are people who want closure and to know the truth.
Sure.
But I think the inquest will only be logical and successful and bear the fruits if the role players, those who were or are alleged to have been involved, they are one active and participating in an inquest.
Sure.
And they are prepared to tell the truth.
Mm.
Now, if you were part of the team that plotted to assassinate a leader of the South African Communist Party, a commander of Nkonto Sizwe, or the last commander, because, you know, Khlisani was the last commander of Nkonto Sizwe, because if you recall, he was with the last batch that came back into the country, while the likes of the late Ntate Joe Modise were already in the country.
Yes. You understand?
So the last commander of Nkonto Sizwe, the flamboyant and vibrant South African Communist Party, Secretary General, who will stand up and say, I'm ready to tell the truth in their normal minds? Who will do that? You know, what I'm saying is, if we fail to get the truth from these people when they are still alive, you know, it's 33 years back.
Mm.
What makes us think we will get the truth now?
Mm.
Especially we have let Janus Walu to live without telling the truth. And the man is not going to tell the truth. The fact that he thought or he is not safe by telling the truth while he was in South Africa, it also brings me to what could have happened to him when he was in jail. If any South African, any patriot wanted to harm Janus Walu, they would have done it in jail.
Sure.
Where are the jail gangs? Where are the patriots? Where are the rebels and revolutionaries?
Walu was a sitting duck.
Exactly. Mm. You understand? When we had that opportunity, nobody has attempted anything on his life.
I suspect he'll release a book because he needs income. I suspect he'll release a book. It'll be a bestseller. And maybe from that book, we'll actually maybe start seeing a trail.
Connecting the dots.
Where we can connect the dots. Or maybe he'll be as bold as to say that, yes, it wasn't just me and Clive Darby Lewis. There was a bigger plan.
Look, it was a bigger plan.
And maybe there was just the two of them.
There were just two lone wolves.
In fact, there was a lone wolf who took a misguided right-wing radicalized youth from Poland and said, here's a gun, there's a darkie, we don't like him, he must die.
Why only him? There were so many communist leaders in South Africa. There were so many radical leaders in the ANC.
Not with the influence and
the level where Hani was.
Hani was on another level.
Yeah, no, he was on another level.
He was on another level. And you know, looking at the fear that was in the heart of a lot of people who believe that we can't trust the blacks with the country, Hani would have been a big problem for them.
Funny enough, Fresh, I must tell you this quickly with the viewers. Being a Pan-Africanist, I had always wished Chris Hani was in the PAC or in the Pan-Africanist camp.
Yeah.
He was just misfitted in the chat. He was one of the ANC leaders that I adored.
Mm.
You know, when this thing happened, one of my best friends and actually my karate mentor, Sekgalem Motsa, we went, he was from the MK, was from Abla.
Mm.
So he went to the Navy.
Sure.
And I was chased away because I couldn't swim.
Mm.
And he went to the Navy, very successful guy, but he was chucked out of the Navy because was...
Your mic is...
The mic, oh.
Yeah.
Is it fine now? Much better. Okay, yeah. Friends. He was in the Navy and he was chucked out of the Navy.
Sure.
He's one of the people, may his soul rest in peace, he passed on years back. You know, Sekgalem Motsa, the first thing that happened when I heard the news of Hani, I said to him, you see, you controversies, guys, you drop the arms, now they're killing your leader. What are you going to do? The man wanted to go and dig the AK-47s and the Pangas. And the MK guys, they actually wanted to start a fight.
To take the fight to them.
To take the fight to them. And that's where Mandela, you know, if you recall, President Mandela was not even in the country when Hani was assassinated. Mm. And I was looking at MK guys to say, let's see, guys, they've taken your commander down. And it's very clear, it's white people, it's racist, it's right-wingers. Do you see why negotiations are not going to work? But I think, you know, at times, rationale kicked in. And that's where the rationale of Mandela kicked in.
I was going to say, I mean, where do you think we would have ended up had the MK taken arms?
Bloodbath in the country.
Yeah.
We could have went into a very serious, you know, and I don't think as black people, we were armed and ready to could have faced the apartheid regime.
Sure.
Internally. On combat, I don't think we're in a position to can do it. The fact that we're in majority, but only 10% of us were exposed to radicalism and military and military training, it was not going to help us.
Sure. May we move on?
Yes, sir.
Until then, we'll wait for Valush's
book to start talking.
Yeah, we'll wait for the book, and there'll probably be a documentary miniseries thing, because unfortunately, his story is a story that will get eyeballs.
If
it's turned into a movie or miniseries.
Yeah, it will. I'm just concerned that his story may just destroy the ANC further, deepen the gap in the ANC. People's name will be thrown in there. People will end up hating each other or hating some leaders of the because of what he's going to say. The thing is, we will never know the truth. It will have to take people with very bright minds to can connect the dots, or somebody from the ANC to stand up and say, before I die, let me tell the truth.
Sure.
But that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone is willing to go out telling the truth. Anyway, the ANC National Working Committee back in the news. What's happening?
Well, you know that about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago, it's 2 weeks, they visited the KZN.
Sure.
It's that process of the ANC to reflect on their loss of the elections.
Yeah, because they're meeting Gauteng next, right?
They've met Gauteng this past week. And the meeting was not as robust and as long as the KZN took place.
Mm.
So 2 weeks ago, they met with KZN. And this week, they met with Gauteng. Look, Banyaza, and coincidentally, this is a very good, interesting coincidence. You know that the ANC Youth League has been troubled. They've not had elective conference and all that.
Mm.
Coincidentally, the ANC Youth League is having its first elective conference since they were dissolved and they've been putting structures to manage them. And the elective conference is happening at the same venue where the National Working Committee and the Gauteng Provincial ANC leadership under Dr. Banyaza Lusufu were meeting.
Mm.
So after that, Banyaza Lusufu had to go and address the youth to open and set the tone for the elective conference. But let me tell you, the Banyaza that was in the room talking to the National Working Committee and the Banyaza that addressed the youth were two separate people.
Sure.
He is still, rebellious.
Mm.
He's standing very firm. Banyaza knows what the youth and the black people of Gauteng are going through. And the Gauteng provincial leadership of the ANC is very solid. They're very solid with their standpoint.
Mm.
And they don't, in a Kasi language, township language, we'll say,
Abafoki.
They don't buy this thing of the DA.
Sure.
And it's really, the DA is really hammering on Gauteng to keep on making this noise so that they can say to the national leadership of the ANC, that braggy, that little chihuahua of yours named Gauteng is giving us problems. And that's where the DA wants the ANC to be, to have the infighting.
Yeah, but I get it, the deal has nothing to do with provincial governance.
Look, the deal has to do with, it's not fresh. It doesn't work like that. The deal is the deal between, you see, lying catches up with people.
Mm.
This is not a national deal. It's a DANC deal.
Full stop. So it should be applied across.
It's from top to bottom across the board.
They must paint everything the same color.
They have to play as DA and ANC agreement. I mean, we have seen people coming out slowly. Even President Mbeki went to address that National Working Committee meeting, saying the ANC is not truthful to itself. I mean, I was shocked that President Mbeki this week, in the same meeting, addressing the National Working Committee and the NEC of the ANC, saying, why is the ANC letting President Ramaphosa to continue misleading them? Mm-hmm. That's President Mbeki's words, not mine.
Yeah.
And to say misleading them, he promised them this engagement with business and he had 5 plans, and only achieved one or implemented one, which was not even successful.
Yeah.
But the ANC is continuing to let President Ramaphosa to give new promises when the old ones are not achieved. Why are they waking up now? He never achieved much of the promises and the, what do you call it, policy conference resolutions or elective conference resolutions, the NEC resolutions. He never achieved them. He keeps on bringing the new ones. Now, President Mbeki is asking them, what are we doing? Why are we still listening to this guy bringing new ideas with businesses, calling again for a business seminar? Then the Youth League is radicalized. It's trying to wake up. Remember the Youth League of the ANC, in true sense and honestly, it last happened when Julius Malema was there. After that...
Yeah, Julius was the last set of teeth.
Yes. Now, Gauteng, I think they became smart. They diverted attention from what the NWC was meeting them for, which was underperformance and the further loss of Gauteng. Remember, in the previous elections, I think they got about 50% or something like that. Now they dropped to about 34.something%. So they diverted attention to say, hey, we've got internal problems. We've got bigger things to be dealing with here than to focus on us not performing. But let me tell you what actually surprised me with the ANC. Immediately after that, their Secretary General, Mr. Fikile Mbalula, stands up to address the media and says, now that they've met KZN and Gauteng provincial leaders, the NEC will only issue the outcome of this engagement after the NEC meeting in January and after or during the January 8th statement. Why did they put us through all this hype when we're going to wait for January 8th statement? Why did they start this process in October, November already and wait for January 8th? I think they're testing the waters. I think they have realized that they are pressing the wrong buttons. Remember last week I said they will be very naive to can disband it. And Fikile says there's three options. But listen to this, Fresh, and people must listen to this carefully. He says there's three options. Either they leave the provincial structures of Gauteng and KZN as they are. That's one. Either they disband them and put temporary structures. Or either they help them, they boost them, they move people around and all that. What other options were there? There's always been that three options. You can't go into an exercise and come back with the results of the obvious. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
These options have always been there. So why did they back?
It's not like there's option four and five.
No, there's no option four and five. It's either you disband or you support the structure.
You find ways of bolstering the structure.
Yeah, you find ways. And there's nothing new, but I think they are playing in the wrong hands because these two structures, remember KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng, have the biggest electorate in the country.
Yes.
And they are the most powerful structures of the ANC by influence. And you don't want to be messing up with it.
So they might have lost the popular vote, but they still have the numbers.
And Fresh, we must be honest and logical. How did they lose? Why did they lose? They didn't lose because they performed bad.
Sure.
They didn't lose because their supporters there. They lost because Umkhonto we Sizwe was born. One of their most popular flamboyant leader, Jacob Zuma, went and formed a political party. And they lost because of that.
And can you really blame anyone for that?
No, you don't. When you have failed to, when you have failed to deliver what your constituency wanted,
yes,
and one of your very, very important leaders decide to take that constituency on that. And you also look at the margins.
Sure.
Look at the percentages that controversies gained. It actually resonates with what the ANC lost.
Exactly.
The numbers, the percentages, whatever. So you can't blame the current leadership.
In fact, Deputy President Mashatile was saying that you know, it's fruitless that we want to point fingers and say it was Busang's fault, it was so-and-so's fault. The bottom line is, it doesn't matter who would have been at the helm of that structure.
Exactly.
The result would have been exactly the same.
The result would have been the same. Would have been the same. So I if I was the ANC advisor, I will tell them to look at how they're going to rebrand, rebuild, you know, and without pointing fingers and blaming each other, because it can cause further damage.
Because I can tell you right now, even if Madiba was still alive and he campaigned for them in KZN,
yes,
and JZ had jumped ship, the result would not have
changed. Leave Madiba even out. Four of their stalwart leaders, President Mbeki, Ntate Tokiwo Sekgwale, Ntate Matthew Sposa, and who was the other one? They all stood up for former big leaders to say, we are going to stand behind the African National Congress in these elections. So I actually joked, if you remember that time, I said it was four against Jacob Zuma.
Yeah.
And it came out clear that he beat all four of them combined with the numbers, the structures, the money, and the, you know, the resources they had. And that's what they should be focusing on. How do they deal with the elephant in the room? The elephant in the room is Umkhonto we Sizwe.
Absolutely. Now, while we're still talking of President Ramaphosa, he's been trending, as always, for wrong reasons. When his Nigerian counterpart was in the country a week ago,
yes,
obviously, you know, they had bilateral discussions, trade discussions, and he also spoke about how visa applications for especially business people wanting to come to South Africa are going to be made less tedious.
Yes.
But people interpreted that as you're opening the border, you must resign. In fact, there were even calls for President Ramaphosa to resign.
Yes.
And I mean, they even issued a statement clarifying
yeah.
exactly what he meant. That all we're saying is now when you apply, you don't have to hand in your passport. As long as we have a picture of the biometric side of your passport, then we can, the process doesn't, so it's, there's minus one hoop. But we will still be thorough in how we process everything. That's my understanding.
You, brother man, you have it right. And you know what? This happened last week and we didn't cover it. It was not part of our agenda or topics. But because of what happened after, that's why I said, I think we need to talk about this. I'm not one of the people who favors President Ramaphosa or his leadership. I hardly defend him. But again, I'm not talking about President Ramaphosa. I'm talking about the process, the rules of the South African consular service or immigration services. Number one, even after the presidency has issued a statement to clarify, people were still on the president's case. And you want to bring Nigerians here, you want to open borders and flood. That is not true. That is not what the president was saying. The problem with South Africa, I'll start with the problem first. The problem with South Africans are, anything that smells foreigners from Africa, particularly Nigerians, they don't want to hear anything.
Sure.
I'm telling you, even if Nigeria can say we are donating oil to South Africa, South Africans will not receive or accept that oil because of the suspicion that has been created that Nigerians are criminals and are bad people. And that is that thing, is the truth that's sitting with us.
And not that I'm agreeing with the social media streets, but unfortunately, the rotten elements from Nigerian society that go into neighborhoods,
other countries,
and are part of human trafficking, drug dealing, inner city decay. Often people can relate to that at a personal level because they will know someone who,
because that's what they know.
Because that's what they know and that's what they've seen.
Yes.
I mean, I can tell you right now that Nigeria probably has more academics globally than any other country.
Absolutely.
Professors and, you know, people at universities across the world, probably more than any other nation. But it's the rotten apples that bring the bad name.
And this rotten apples fresh, as you put it, they have either outnumbered or dominated the good ones.
Sure.
And globally, you understand? Globally, it's not only in South Africa.
Sure.
This past week, actually, the UK government, and we'll get back to our story, the UK government had sent the foreign nurses for testing. You know, when there's nurses from South Africa who immigrated to they send them for testing to test their qualifications. Over 80% of Nigerian nurses who were accepted into the health system of the UK were found to not be nurses, fake qualifications, liar. They couldn't even pass basic tests.
Yeah.
You understand? In the UK, this past week, I'm not talking about history. Now, what President Ramaphosa was doing and saying, let me first say, guys, it is normal in consular services. Immigration consular is covering immigration services. It is very normal. It's a common practice that there's various reasons why a diplomatic mission or a consulate or an embassy will say, keep your passport while you are processing your visa application.
Sure.
It's a normal practice. It does happen. We are not starting with Nigeria. And the, one of the reasons they do, remember, President Ramaphosa was talking specifically about business visa applicants
people
to South Africa.
To do business.
To come and do business, whether whatever kind of business. Mm. Okay. And we're not talking about criminals here. We're talking about official people who are coming in. Now, if you're a business person,
fresh, because the criminals are going to get in whether we want them here
or not. No. They will come in. But let me make an example. You are a business person.
Sure.
You travel a lot.
Mm.
Now, if you have a passport that you are applying for a South African visa, let's say at the South African High Commission in Botswana. Let's assume you're in Botswana.
And now it's sitting there.
Now it's sitting there and you have to travel to Mauritius to work.
Exactly.
You know, when you need your passport to travel. Now, South Africa is saying, we are going to make it easy for official visa applicants to say, while we are considering your visa application,
you can keep your passport.
You can keep your passport.
Yeah.
When we say we have granted your visa, you must bring that passport. But people did not read. Mm. The government went further to say, you can't even bring a different passport from the one you gave us. You must bring back that one that we kept its biometric page certified. We certified it. You must bring exactly that one so that we can put your visa a label in your passport. That's common cause. That's normal.
I mean, I'll give you an example. When I traveled to Europe a couple of months ago, I had to speak to the visa office and tell them that, listen, I'm applying, but I still need my passport.
Yes.
But I had to ask them nicely that, listen, yes, I need my Schengen visa.
Yes.
But right now I need my passport because I'm traveling
somewhere
while
else.
You're considering it.
Exactly.
I will bring it back after traveling.
Yes.
But some countries don't allow that.
Yeah.
And for that reason, you're going to lose out on someone who's got $1 billion to spend saying, I can't apply for your visa because now it means I can't travel to my other
destinations to other or business destinations. Places. Yes.
So all it is it's minus one hurdle, but we will still vet everyone who's applying.
Again, there's another element, having have worked in an environment.
Mm.
A passport, it's a face value document.
Sure.
If you are keeping, let's say 50 Nigerians are applying for business visas at the South African High Commission or Consulate in Abuja. If you are keeping the 50 of those passports, you must safeguard them.
Sure.
You must keep them in such a manner that they are not stolen, they are not lost, or they are not damaged. So it's an extra responsibility to do that. And like I said, I think the problem here is it's because it's the Nigerians.
Mm.
You know, people went to an extent of even asking when the president said, we want to see more Nigerian products on South African shelves.
Mm.
People went to an extent of saying, what are Nigerian products? Rice. We don't need that they arise here. It's already here anyway. People were actually asking, what are Nigerian products? And I find myself scratching my head now that what are Nigerian products that we want to see on our shelves?
Well, apart from the oil, obviously there's, petroleum products. Petroleum byproducts.
Exactly.
I mean, there's potential trillion rand business between Nigeria and South Africa.
Absolutely.
That is not happening.
And I think as governments and as the two giant nations of Africa, we should not allow the criminal element of our people to can actually stop the government from doing its duties and its normal business and bilateral engagements and transactions. We should actually encourage the government to guard against criminals who are taking advantage of opportunities that the government had created. That's what we should be doing.
Mm.
There are criminals. There are, for example, Fresh, I'm running an Airbnb business.
Mm.
And it has nothing to do with xenophobia or what, but I've taken a conscience decision after experience that I do not allow Nigerian nationals to book my business because of the way they've conducted themselves before.
Mm.
And those people, I found out they were criminals. So they have now swelled everybody else. Unless I've got friends from Nigeria, I've got neighbors who are from Nigeria. They are here, professional engineers, doctors. And unless they book my place to go and stay there because I know them or they book for family members, but an unknown person, I will not allow it. And it has nothing to do with being Nigeria-phobic or what. It's a control mitigating factor that I've put into place to say to avoid stress and trouble and risks.
Mm.
I'm not going to allow that. But I think the government must do more.
Sure.
Explain more to people, educate the people more about how the visa system works. And it's the same as people saying, why do we give Zimbabweans visas to come to South Africa. People don't know that actually Zimbabweans do not need any visa to come to South Africa if you are here for visitors, you know, short term. And what is short term in this instance? The Immigration Act allows up to 90 days.
Sure.
But again, me and you, every week we hammer on one thing. Know your laws, know your rules, inform yourself before you can go and make noise that South Africa has opened floodgates for Nigerians. That is not true. That is not correct. And that's not what the president has meant. And I'm not here to protect President Ramaphosa or the GNU. I'm saying that's what the rules of this country at the moment are prescribing to Nigerian nationals coming to South Africa.
In fact, all nationals.
Yes, yes. Well, there can be difference from here and there.
Sure. It's nuanced accordingly.
Yes. Yes. Understand. Mm. So there is nothing specific. And that's where that's why the president of Nigeria was here.
Sure.
On an annual binational, you know, bilateral visit and relations. Those are some of the things that are discussed. There's so many things that were discussed there.
And I think it's very important that nations meet and discuss this and renew whatever pacts we might have made, because that's how you oil that machine. That's exactly how you keep the machine going. I mean, for instance, I had no idea that there was a deal between Namibia and Botswana.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't need a passport anymore.
Yes.
As long as you have your national ID.
Yes.
You just show your ID and you cross the border.
And you cross, yes. I mean, it happens. We have the same with some ports. In South Africa, it's in some ports of entry.
Yeah.
Between Botswana and South Africa, there's a border crossing that's by foot border. There's no vehicles.
Sure.
Tsidilamulomo or something like that.
Mm.
You don't need a passport to can cross because the village is this side and this side. You actually walk 10 minutes.
And it's families. And it's literally...
Yeah, and the government came with a wise decision to say you don't need to stay. The passport will be full in 1 week.
Exactly.
And as I said, so you need your South African ID card or your Botswana ID card to show to an immigration official and you cross. We have the same in Lesotho. There's a port of entry between Lesotho and South Africa where the families, actually kids, literally go to school from Lesotho into South Africa.
They walk across the border.
They walk across the border. Why do you need a passport for that?
Mm.
These are some of the provisions that are made by governments. And the reason the government arrives at that spot, as you correctly say, is because there's this bilateral engagements where public officials sit down and say, no, but what can we do to can aid those families, to can aid those taxi drivers who are transporting people? A passport is very expensive, about 600 rands. Now, if every week you have to renew a passport because it's full, the government provides solutions to what we call the tried and tested travelers.
And I think even more important than that is, how do we facilitate that there's trade between the two nations?
You know, you make me feel like I'm at work now, because one of my major KPIs was to facilitate trade and travel between our neighboring countries.
Yes.
Whether it's vehicles, passengers, or goods.
Yeah.
To make sure that there's a free flow. There's a seamless flow of trade between the countries. And we are not putting a blind eye on criminal elements. We are not. We are simply saying we can't neglect and ignore the work that we are supposed to do as governments.
Sure.
Because criminals are taking advantage of the good relations between the countries. We must actually deal with the criminals.
Absolutely. Let's move to the G20 summit. South Africa is the chair.
Yes.
And SA's G20 Sherpa, Zane Dango, says concerns about Trump's administration are not top of the agenda. The G20 Sherpa met for a second day. They met on Tuesday, I think, in Sandton, deliberating on issues expected to take center stage during SA's presidency. What are your thoughts on the G20 so far and where we're going? And Zane Dango also being the Sherpa.
Well, look, Zane has been in government diplomatic circles for some time.
Yes.
I think he's well fitted to can do that. But I actually like his approach of saying they are not going to waste the time and the energy of the G20 to focus on the bilateral relations with the US, the Trump administration. There's platforms to can handle that. South Africa has an ambassador designated. By the way, a month ago, I said rumors that the former ambassador to the US, Ibrahim Rasool, is going back.
He's going back
it
home.
It is confirmed. He is going back there.
Yes.
So my sources were very right at that time. But I think Dango is handling this very well. Let South Africa focus on the G20, which, in my view, It's a toothless dog barking. Look, these are 20 governments. Actually, it's 21. I've explained before that they've taken Africa. South Africa is chairing the G20 now, starting from the 1st of December moving forward, representing Africa that came as a, what do you call it, as a block.
As a collective.
Yeah, as a collective.
Because we are one count.
Nonsense.
Imagine.
Yeah. So, look, Fresh, how many international bodies have we chaired? How many supposed to be influential bodies have we chaired, chaired as a nation? What fruits is it bearing for us? The G20 involves developing countries. I've listened to the Sherpa of Brazil. Again, Brazil talking as if they are representing us. They are saying, Africa, rise, stand up, look at us. We didn't come as a bloc in Latin America. We come as Brazil and individual countries to the G20 because it's the 7 richest countries from the G7. Then they've added these little ones that they want to control from the so-called global south and countries that are developing countries. And we found ourselves in the middle of that. You understand? I am concerned that I don't think our leaders, particularly President Ramaphosa's administration, it is not honest to the global countries about the situation in South Africa or in Africa in general since they went there as a collective. Fresh, let me make an example. Why would you take the G20 countries that are focusing on development to a meeting in Sandton? Why? If you want these developing countries, remember what President Ramaphosa said in Brazil when he was handed over the baton of the G20. He said he wants the global north, who are actually investors and business owners in Africa and they own our mina, to come and see how our people live in poverty and squalor because they are not plowing back.
Absolutely.
Now you take those people, they are in South Africa, they are having a meeting in Sandton. Under the big statue of Nelson Mandela, they did not see the reality. They should have taken this G20 meeting in the middle of Alexander Khayelitsha.
Or take them to Marikana.
Or take them to Marikana.
So they can see how miners are living.
Actually, that's a good idea. Take them to Marikana, see how the miners that are mining for them, those who are taking our minerals in the mines, or whether it's gold, whether it's platinum or what, why take them to Sandton so that they can see the reality? Feed them with water from that dam in Marikana or where the mine is dumping. Let us put that water on the table. Don't give them bottled water. Let them see what they are doing. Maybe humanity will kick in when they see reality. Now take them to Sandton. They see everything is glitz and glamour. That's why they don't believe. That's why the G7 countries and the countries of the north, they don't believe that countries of the south are poor. Because when they go to Brazil, they go to Brasilia, the capital, which is one of the world's most modern cities. When they come to South Africa, they are either in Cape Town or in Sandton. I don't even want to say in Joburg. I want to say in Sandton specifically. You understand?
In fact, the closest to squalor they might see is Babatawako Summit Club ko Hillbro, because they're feeling naughty.
I'm not part of it. You understand? So we are not realistic. We are global countries of the South, and we are begging the North countries, because that's what they've done. They've cut the world through the equator and said the North are rich, the other ones, And we are begging them to help us when the resources belong to us.
Yeah.
When the labor belongs to us. This was the best time for President Ramaphosa to take these Anglo-American miners. It was the best time for President Ramaphosa to take them to Stilfontein and show how their American mining companies have left the slums and danger of what is happening in the country. But we are not realistic. Anyway, congratulations to South Africa for the first time in the history of the G20 for us chairing this. I'm not negative, but I don't have any special expectations. I don't think nothing will come out of this. This has been happening for years. We have had men, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma chairing the AU. We have chaired almost everything in this world. Almost everything. We have been in the forefront. But I think they are giving us cheese. You know, I think they are playing us. They are giving our leaders stock sweets, what do you call stock sweets? Lollipops to can play them. They want to diffuse the tension that may be coming up with the youth and the new generation. I think bringing these events and talking big language and big English about investors in South Africa and all that, I think they are making sure that we don't end up the way the West Africa has ended at the moment.
And for instance, I mean, you look at the G20 summit coming here. There'll be an opportunity for a lot of small businesses to maybe make money.
Yes.
But I will bet you any amount of money, a lot of opportunities are probably going to be given to people already getting opportunities.
Yeah.
Already in the system.
Exactly.
Already friends with the people that make the decisions about where do we book these people? Where do we send them?
Yes.
Who's going to provide the entertainment? Whose sound system are we hiring? Who's doing the catering? It's almost like it's one feeding pool of the same people. So there's an opportunity here to increase the value chain, to diversify the value chain, to give some kid who's never had an opportunity to be a tour guide.
Yes.
To
turn off those guests.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no. You see, you are actually even simplifying it. We could have used that opportunity. Like we did during the World Cup. You remember during the World Cup, there were people who were building backyard rooms and
all that. There's still BNBs that never had one guest.
Yeah, but it did not happen to that level. But opportunities were given to other people. You are mentioning tourism, a tour guide.
Yeah.
There's a lot of youth who went and studied a learnership provided by the government for tourism. This was an opportunity to go to those schools or institutions that actually we're rolling out that government learnership program to say, where are those youth? Let them come and escort these delegates in vehicles branded and provided by Freshers Quantum, for example. Take them into the townships. No. The money is going to go again. That's why it's in Sandton. They're sleeping in hotels in Sandton. You understand? Who is recording this? Who's filming this? Whose equipment is being used there? We are failing to can go for the low-hanging fruits that can make an impact on economic lives of the ordinary South Africans.
There's an opportunity to say, we need, I don't know, 50 videographers, and we're going to assign you a delegate to document that trip in South Africa.
Yes.
And we're going to use that on social media to talk about, this is the other side of South Africa that the delegates experience.
Yes.
There's so many opportunities to empower young people who are... South Africa is some of the best videographers on social media right now.
Exactly.
When you look at the content.
Our social media is buzzing.
But how many of these kids will be given an opportunity to document, even if just you're going to follow the AU delegates. And we need a 3-minute video every day of what they were doing.
Different. Yeah. Take them. To go and eat in the township, take them.
No, they'll do that, but they're all going to go to Wendy's. Wendy's is going to be on some hot leads.
Yeah, but it's full. But diversify, take them to different places.
Exactly.
That will not only boost that particular young individual to be exposed and have an economic opportunity, it will also boost our tourism. To say it's not only about Sandton and the Nelson Mandela Square.
Mm.
There are other places that tourism can tap into. But no, first, our government leaders or political leaders work in silos. They don't have a foresight. You understand? They don't see a bigger picture and big opportunity. I've said before, most of the successful countries in the world, Malaysia, Singapore, and many other countries, they became successful due to small business.
Sure.
You know, due to small business, they are where they are today due to investing. And investing is not giving people money.
And making it easy for the businesses to operate.
To operate, yes.
Less hoops to jump through. Yes, you must have legislation, but must not be a hindrance to me starting my business.
Exactly. And that's where we have failed to grab the opportunity to be. That's why I'm saying, what does it mean that we are chairing the G20?
Mm.
What does it mean to an ordinary South African?
Sure.
What impact is it going to make to an ordinary South African if we fail to grasp the opportunity at the opening ceremony that has happened this past week of the G20? We should have exploited the fact that over 300 delegates have been to South Africa for the opening of the G20 from the committees of finance, from the governors of reserve banks, because there's so many committees that are happening. We could have taken advantage of that, and we are not doing that. Where is small business? Where is tourism? Where is social development in this instance?
Why are we not using Butsang's BNB?
Including education.
True.
The schools are closed, or kids have finished writing exams. Mm. This was an opportunity for a Department of Education to say those who have just written matric, since you are choosing to go and study at universities in future, come and experience and see what is the G20. Choose, let's say, top 10 children from or disadvantaged children from each province. Have 90 kids funded by the state to go and attend the G20 to understand what is the G20 and what is the intention of countries of the Global South to participate in the G20. Take an 18-year-old who have just finished matric to be part of that. Let me tell you, that's a great investment. That child will go back to the village or the township and tell the people, what is the G20? What is global? But we know the media is not going to tell them. People don't read newspapers. People don't listen to news. And that's what we should be doing.
Absolutely. Quickly, happening this weekend, the National People's Assembly of the EFF. Electing new leaders, reviewing policy. What are your views? What are your predictions? If at all there's anything to predict.
First, I don't think there'll be much change. The fanfare and the hullabaloo has ended. Julius has handled it before the elective conference. I think it is going to go Julius' slate.
Okay.
I think he's going for the third term, and the people that he's going to prefer to be in the central command team, like Mr. Goodrich Gadi, and I think Mbuyiseni has withdrawn out of this race. He never started. It was the people who wanted him, and people like Marshall, they will come back. Leanne Mathis will come back. I don't think there'll be any big change, but I think it will also aid the EFF to stabilize.
Yeah.
I think they need stability now at the moment. You know, the former leading party, ANC, and the former third leading party in their country, the EFF, they are going through a turmoil, and it's normal in politics. But I think them stabilizing their leadership and the policies of the EFF have been very clear and solid. And I don't think there'll be much changes. I think they should look at the strategy of how they are going to be running the movement or the organization from now moving forward.
Sure.
I think they need more work on that than policy and leadership. Leadership, I don't expect any changes. I think Julius is coming back. That's definitely nobody challenges him. I think Leanne will be in. I think the Treasurer General. I don't think Mbuyiseni will be on the top six of the EFF. I think,
do you think he'll last another year at the EFF?
You know, first, this has been a difficult one. If I was Mbuyiseni, I would stay in the EFF. It will be good for him to stay if he wants to further his career in politics.
Sure.
Leaving and jumping gun is just going to cause him more stress and say, we knew you were an opportunist. Remember, Julius's idea is that they are waiting to lose at the elective conference and they will jump ship.
Sure.
I would not give him that. If I was him, I will not do that. But Mbuyiseni has said it over and over, how, you know, Dr. Ndlozi, how he loves the EFF and he has no plans to leave. But, you know, politicians, they all say that. And tomorrow we have a different story.
Absolutely.
But I think he will last. Okay. I think if he takes a back seat and keep quiet and focus on building the organization that he claims to love, he will last longer than that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's go to Ghana. One of the many nations going to the polls this year.
Yes.
So in 2016, John Mahama was voted out amidst accusations of corruption
yeah.
amongst other things. The economy was also problematic. There was an energy crisis in Ghana. And earlier this week, Mahama was voted back into the presidency by the people of Ghana.
Victorious.
I think he won by 55% of the vote. What are your views on what's happening in Ghana?
Look, first, we spoke about last week how definitely the outgoing president will lose. The writing was on the wall that he is going to lose. But for the Ghanaians to bring back the man they have taken out of power almost 8-10 years back, I don't know whether there's a vacuum of leadership in that country. Because recycling politicians, it also says a lot about the nation. Are you saying there are no new faces, new people, new vibrant, like it happened in Botswana?
Maybe
like,
even younger.
You understand? You took a person out 8 years back to say he's corrupt, he has brought the country down and all that. What, and he has been out. He actually never even lived in the country.
No, he didn't.
You understand?
Yeah.
Now you think that person will come back recycled and better, being a better product.
Maybe they're hoping he's had a Damascus moment and he's a new man and he's coming back with
in
new
politics,
energy.
A new man.
He's coming back with a renewed fervor and will to lead the people to the promised land.
I don't think he's going to bring any difference. I think what the Ghanaians should have done, they should have brought a young new person into, and they had an opportunity. They even had independent candidates contesting. They had an opportunity to bring a change, but like all other old African states, they've gone back to the old. They've seen what the Zimbabweans have done, you know, bringing Mnangagwa in. We have seen the Namibians, although with Namibia, or albeit with Namibia, is different.
It's a different president. It's a woman. That's the same party.
But also, it's the same party. That it's the same party.
It's the same bottle of wine.
Exactly. Understand? It's that bottle of wine that you drank half and you kept it for 2 years. And after 2 years, like, that wine may be tasting better now because it was breathing. And that's how they do it. Mm. I don't think it's a good move for Ghana.
Sure.
I don't have anything against Mahama. He had failed them before. And then he missed 2 terms, and then you think he will come back with different ideas. I doubt it.
What if it's a case of better the devil we know than the devil we don't know?
Well, we have seen in politics where people are saying, we've been saying better the devil we know with the ANC. What has it done? It has become worse every year.
Mm.
You understand? Although it's a political party in South Africa, there it's an individual. And maybe, let's see, maybe they know what they are doing. I'm not in the feet of the Ghanaian people, but I followed politics so much in the world that I know that recycling politicians is not going to bring any difference in the lives of the people.
Sure. We are out of time, but we can't leave without touching on Syria. Syria has a transitional prime minister who has called for stability and calm.
Yes.
I think finally, after years of having a jackboot on your neck.
50 years.
The rebel group in Syria finally got it right.
You know, first, this caught me by surprise, man.
Yes.
And I'll tell you why. That the Syrian government, as much as it had a dictator in, what is that?
Mohammed al-Bashir.
Al-Bashir, yes.
Yes.
As much as him and his family, actually, his family has been ruling Syria.
It was a family business.
Yeah, it was a family business. I never thought the rebels are positioned, especially at this stage, to can topple him.
Sure.
I never imagined. I didn't see that one coming. I was worried about Israel bombing Syria and a war escalating in that country than the internal one.
Mm.
And especially that the al-Bashir government was backed by both Tehran and Moscow.
Yeah, Iran and Russia.
Yeah, Iran and Russia. Backed by that. But I also think the rebels took advantage of the fact that Iran is busy fighting and focusing on Israel, and Moscow or Russia is busy focusing on the war in Ukraine. And I think they took advantage of that.
Mm.
But we must also remember that they did not topple him and he didn't run away. They let him, you know, they gave him a passage to can leave, to can go to Moscow. They could have blocked him into the country, but there was also a mutual agreement that pack your bags and go. We want to run the country at the moment. So they didn't do what the Libyans did with Gaddafi.
Sure.
You understand? They didn't do that. But look, it's a change of regime. But you know, your worst enemies in the world, Israel, then takes advantage of that. Breaking international rules.
I was going to say,
breaking the no-fly zone.
How's Israel
and
now?
Bombing Syria like nobody's business.
Bombing military installations.
Yes. Because remember, the Israelis believe that Iran has been arming Syria.
So now we're going to disarm
advantage,
them.
Now we're going to disarm them because the arms will fall into the hands of Hamas, Hezbollah, and you understand, and all the rebel groups that are fighting.
Also, it's preemptive.
They are preemptive. We're
protecting ourselves.
Yes. And they went and they started bombing Syria when it's going through political transition.
Not that they care, but what of international law, though?
Fresh, when did Israel ever respect international laws?
Hence,
when?
I say, not that they care. I mean, they flouted UN conventions just in that act.
Do you know that the day after they started bombing Syria on Sunday night, on Monday, their ambassador to the United Nations issued a note verbal to the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres to say, by the way, we know that we have broken the international treaty rules and the airspace and the war zone, but yeah, we are doing it to protect ourselves.
Imagine.
In case these people lay their hands on those arms and come to attack us.
Is that why they bomb children in Gaza, in case they turn into adults?
Into adults. Yeah. That's how Israel operates. They
the
say,
thinking?
In case this child, this infant grows and become a teenager and a suicide bomber, let's kill him before. Okay, and that's how that's what they have done in Syria this week.
It makes sense.
Again, though. Look at it. They are saying they are bombing those military barracks and all that, so that the rebels must not lay their arms on these arms, their hands on these arms. The same Israel has laid its hands on the arms from the United States of America. They are using American arms to kill children in Palestine, in Syria, in Damascus, in Lebanon, and everywhere. Understand? And it's okay with the UN.
Yeah.
They even tell the UN that we are going to do it.
Imagine.
So there is no rule of law that the Israelis are respecting.
But to show you how much of a brutal leader al-Bashir was, the fact that Syrian refugees are coming back in droves this week alone.
Blah, in less than 3 days, the people were flocking back. But that's what dictatorship gone wrong does to the people. And certainly with Syria, other people will get involved and take advantage of this, like Israel and so forth. But he was a very brutal leader.
Yeah.
I mean, also, he did nothing, you know? Fresh, that country has been in a war for what, 20, 30 years? There's no roads. Did you see the fleet? There's a video making rounds of the fleet of vehicles that he owned, from Ferraris to Lamborghinis. Where was he going to drive? There's a whole basement at the palace. Over 50 luxury Bentleys and all. Where was he going to drive those vehicles? You know, African leaders, they steal better. They're all thugs, but they still, they at least buy villas in the Mobutu Sese Seko. They buy villas in Switzerland. The modern day ones, they buy in Dubai. But putting 50 super vehicles with zillions in the garage, and you don't have street, you can't even drive them because there's missiles flying every day. I don't understand how old dictators think, actually.
I laughed my first ever visit to Mozambique over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so they were showing me around, my host, and we drove past the state house.
Yes.
But the road in right around the state house, just potholes. I'm like, the very least I would do is say, guys, can the road in front of my house at
fix
least...
it? Now, I'll tell you why. I lived next to in that road.
Yes.
That white house, I lived in the apartment next door. Because it was owned by the Danish. So I was living in the presidential compound. Let me tell you why. Because they don't stay there. They don't stay in that state house. They've got beautiful houses in the countryside and all that. They are not staying in. That's why they don't care. They never drive that road unless they're in a 4x4 to go and charge if the cleaners are removing dust. But the Mozambican presidents, they don't stay in that state house in the center of Maputo. And that's the reason they don't care. Check the road that goes to Shai Shai and Inyambane, where they've got villas. You must check those roads.
I'll do that on my next trip. Yeah. In fact, I had a gig in Mozambique, I think the 28th of December.
December now.
And they've had to cancel it because they don't know the direction things are going.
Yeah, but things have gone worse. You saw what happened.
Things have gone worse
this week.
Even at the border, it's bad now.
No, it's so bad at the border. And, you know, I feel so bad, Fresh. It's so bad that I listened to the Minister of Transport saying the Mozambicans told them the night before. Lebombo Border Post is the busiest post coming to goods.
Yes.
Ne? And the Mozambicans woke up and said, we can't afford to have the port of entry, the border of Lebombo, be open 24 hours, as we normally do.
Sure.
They didn't even consult. They just took a decision. It's so bad. I don't know if I have to give an advice to any traveler at the moment based on my experience.
Sure.
I will tell anybody it is not safe to travel to Maputo at the moment, even if we are going to festivities. They may take advantage of the fact that we may find ourselves locked up in Mozambique until the end of January.
Yeah, dude.
I would not recommend it.
Yes, sir. Yeah. We are done. We're out of time. And we are going to do this one more time next week. And then we're going to take a holiday.
You know, when I spoke to Kelly in the studio this morning, I'm like, are we finishing today?
He said,
no, Fresh is refusing one more.
We have one more week. There's too much happening in the world.
The
for
viewers
us to go
will be
away.
So happy to hear that. But I thought we are finishing today. But no, that's fine, bro. I'm available.
In fact, during the holidays, we will even go live on Instagram and do live Instagram
the
session there every Saturday morning at 8.
No, that's fine. No, we can do a final show next week.
Great stuff. Where do people find you? How do I order your book?
Botsangm@gmail.com and 082-485-9100 call, WhatsApp call, and @BotsangM on social media handles. Thanks, bro.
Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being a part of hashtag Politrix on Wow What a Week. Please remember to subscribe, share the links, tell everyone to come hang out with Fresh and Botsang on hashtag Politrix on Wow What a Week. Coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg, we are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Trevor and the Pezulu Works team, shout out for all of your cinematography and the editing, and shout out to our mother, our menenja, Keletso Modisakeng, our executive producer. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.